Hello and welcome to the March podcast from the London Philharmonic Orchestra. I'm Edward Seckerson. This month I'm exploring the orchestra's youth fusion group, The Band, and I'll be taking a nostalgic trip back to the late 1980s with a recording of Mahler's Second Symphony, Resurrection, under the baton of one of the great Mahlerians of our times, Klaus Tennstedt. But we start with a look ahead to the brand new season of concerts starting in September this year, fresh off the press and only just unveiled. This is an exciting time of the year when orchestras, opera companies and festivals from around the world begin announcing their plans. For a journalist like myself, it's the beginning of an enormous juggling act as dates start filling up the diary. In a city like London, surely now the number one city for music in the world, difficult choices sometimes have to be made. But oh, to have that choice. We really are spoiled. The LPO and its music director, Vladimir Yurovsky, have in particular been challenging us in exciting new ways. Their new season brochure is out now, and you can also browse the online version at www.lpo.org.uk. At the London Philharmonic Orchestra, the responsibility for liaising with conductors and soloists to create the overall programme falls to Timothy Walker, Chief Executive and Artistic Director. So, who better to set out the stall and fill us in on some of the main themes and events?
Welcome to the London Philharmonic Orchestra's 2010-2011 Royal Festival Hall season. We're concentrating this season on Mahler. It's 150 years since he was born in 2010 and 100 years since he died in 2011. In particular, we're looking at the song cycles. We'll present all of those, plus a few of the symphonies, some of the arrangements that Mahler did, and also Mahler in the context of his contemporaries, Zemlinsky, for example. Our principal conductor is heavily involved with this survey of Mahler's work, but also he will be continuing his survey of the symphonies of Tchaikovsky with the second, fourth, and fifth. Our principal guest conductor returns to us with a range of repertoire. We have some of the great soloists of our time, Evgeny Kissin, Leif Ove Janssens, Emmanuel Lax, Nicholas Angelich, and Helene Grimaud amongst the pianists, but also some new faces to introduce to you, David Frey, Andreas Hefliger, Oleg Mashev, and very specially the young Uzbek pianist Bejok Abdurahmov, who won last year's London International Piano Competition. The range of soloists is just as great, with the violinists Anne-Sophie Mutter, Frank-Peter Zimmermann, Christian Teslav. There are, of course, a number of premieres, world premieres, UK premieres. An Italian, Matteo D'Amico, a work that involves the Hilliard Ensemble at the beginning of our season. A new work for percussion from Magnus Lindberg. And a new work from the Australian composer Brett Dean. There are choral works, of course, and we continue our collaboration with Opera Rara, with a rare opportunity to hear Rossini's opera Aureliano in Palmyra. This season we also have a change in composer-in-residence. Marc-Antony Turnage has been with us for 5 years. We now welcome this season Julian Anderson, and we're starting that association with a very short commission, actually, for the 350th anniversary of the Royal Society. Not actually a work in our season, but a royal fanfare for when the Queen makes some special awards associated with the Royal Society's anniversary in Royal Festival Hall in June. Continuing with our season, we're going to look at some of his early works, including The Crazed Moon. There are a few things that I'm particularly excited about this season. I'd have to say it's fantastic to welcome Ed Gardner back to the LPO, now music director of English National Opera. He will be doing Elgar's Dream of Gerontius with us, and I think that that is something worth looking forward to. Of course, we also welcome back regular conductor associates Christoph Eschenbach, Maren Olsop, Nini Yavi, Osmo Vanska. It's an amazing privilege to put together a programme such as this, and I really hope you will enjoy listening to it as much as I've enjoyed putting it together.
The band is an education project with a difference. It's streetwise and happening, if you'll forgive my attempts at hip. Essentially, the band works like this. Young musicians and would-be young musicians from the London boroughs of Southwark, Lambeth and Lewisham work alongside members of the LPO to create their own music under the guidance of director Phil Mullen. It's very much a two-way process, and that's what makes it unique. I caught up with Phil as the band was working towards a performance in the Claw Ballroom space at the Royal Festival Hall on the 12th of March to find out more about this process of creating music as a group. We also hear from band members Flo and Jasmine and LPO contrabassoonist Simon Estelle. Marlon, how did a musician like yourself, you're a performer, come to start working with raw talent from all kinds of walks of life and turning them into a viable kind of musical force? How did it come about?
Well, it's a funny kind of thing because I think I've ended up doing this for quite a long time now with various different organisations, but falling into doing that with the London Philharmonic Orchestra has been a really lovely challenge and delight, to be honest, because some people still to this day have this perception of orchestras as a little fuddy-duddy, classical music as not being their area. And quite often we'd find with young people, with some young people where they're into the rock or the urban music or whatever it might be, that they've got an impression of classical music and orchestras and players as being a bit stuffy and
another
so forth.
World.
It's another world.
That's the way
and
I was brought up.
Absolutely.
Kind of, you know,
and I was as well.
Yeah.
What's delightful now is that we've really moved on beyond that. You know, what we've got very, very skilled players who are very skilled communicators, who are very open-minded. So they bring a lot to working in a relationship with young musicians, you know, teenage musicians, who probably wouldn't go into this area at all. You know, they probably wouldn't go to an orchestral concert without this project and that kind of thing, and they'd probably stay within quite defined genre boundaries. We've been able to encourage them to think outside the box, to play outside the box, to make collaborative, compositions together. And that's tremendously exciting. Now, it's what I've been doing before myself, but to do it with the orchestral support is really extraordinary, and to do it in the Royal Festival Hall as well.
Okay, so tell us how the band, it's called, how it works, and you know, it's a real main plank now of the London Philharmonic's education work, and tell us how it works, because you there are no auditions as such.
No.
So how on earth do you decide who's going to be a part of this?
Well, it's the extraordinary kind of thing, because we did, you know, agonise a bit about this and about levels and all, and whether people, and we actually decided that the motivation was going to be the deciding factor, that if the young people, it's young people from the South East London boroughs, you know, and we decided that if they were motivated enough to come along regularly and give passion and enthusiasm, and had, you know, they were targeted that they'd already had a start in music, they had an interest in an instrument, that had done some kind of things, then that we wouldn't audition and go for the top group. We'd actually go for a mixed group and see that mix of how that mix of abilities played out, mix of interest, mix of abilities, and kind of, I suppose, mix of areas as well, because, you know, South East London's seen often to be very divided and seen to have a lot of issues, and of course we've kids coming from different parts of it who are mixing fine, you know. We actually wanted to work with keen young people who wanted to have an open-minded approach and develop their own creative skills, and we're able to, and this is a lovely thing about them, that we're able to take some direction and coaching and work in collaboration with older musicians who had great skills, and they were able to develop a mutual respect.
Hi, I'm Jasmine During. I go to Dunraven sixth form. I'm 17 years old, and I've been in the band since it started, so that's been about a year.
I'm Flo, I'm 17, I go to Graveney sixth form. I play the bass, and I sing as well, and I've been going to the band since it started as well.
My name is Simon Estelle. I'm the principal contra bassoon player in the LPO. I've been a member there for just over 7 years. I mean, all the education work interests me, but the band is particularly good because it's a very practical thing. It's creating music from absolutely nothing.
We're doing some work with them now, leading towards a concert in the festival hall, you know, Ballroom area, on the 12th of March. And in the later evening concert, there's some Ravel pieces going on. So we put up the thing for them to have a listen to the Ravel pieces and see if we could make links. And I think that was a first for many in the group. Many of the young people there would have possibly not listened, or, you know, closed the ears down or whatever. And because we've a good relationship and we've established a good relationship, they were able to go, well, I get this out of it, or I feel that out of it, or here's what I hear and here's what I... So it was very nice. It was a very nice balance there, and people feeding in different things that I think would have been interesting to the orchestral musicians as well. How do young people respond to this?
Starting point, or someone starts playing something and they're like, oh, keep playing that, or join in, can we have the strings, and it just flows naturally, I suppose.
Destruction. You know, I mean, what these people come up with is astonishing, and playing abilities across the board are ranging from sort of fairly minimal standard to, you know, quite a high standard, but, you know, we work together as a team and we pull each other through and create some, you know, some fantastic, more than anything fun, but some great music.
Good improvisers often make the best classical musicians, because they have a sense of that freedom within the music.
Sure, and this idea of freedom within the music, and the idea of approaching it in an open way, is something that has come from both groups of musicians, and I think it's nice for the young people to have that reinforced, that we are saying, look, open ears, open attitude, being free, being spontaneous, absolutely valued within what we do, plus the value of practice, plus the value of discipline, plus the value of taking on other things, you know, from outside your musical genre.
I ain't leaving you no more, I said, baby.
Are you constantly surprised at what they come up with?
Ah, sure, young people. I mean, it's extraordinary. I mean, I've been working with young people for well over 20 years now, and they're continuously creative. I've never met a group that aren't extremely creative and just are buzzing and full of ideas. But the thing is to let those ideas out and manage the ideas so that everybody gets a fair go, and that we look at the ideas critically enough that we can make the best of them. But in terms of ideas, oh, it's constant and unusual and different ways of thinking. And the ability to develop and refine the work over time, it's extraordinary, really, to be honest, yeah.
Are they amazed, those that are new to the idea of the symphony orchestra, and those who perhaps, I gather they go to rehearsals sometimes and hear, you know, see what a conductor actually does in terms of rehearsing a piece and what an orchestra does. Are they amazed at how much is actually, how free things sound, but when they're written down?
Well, I think taking them into rehearsal is a really big experience for them, and they probably, I mean, whether they've been to a concert or not, I doubt if they've been to rehearsal, and to see what goes on and to see the magic there from the conductor and the nuance of expression from a little hand movement or a little gesture, that this changes the music altogether. I think that's a very big gig for them, and they're really, that, in fact, I think more than anything else, that draws them into the world of orchestral music, more than anything else, that experience. And that and the relationships with the musicians, you know. So that's really transforming for a lot of them, and they get more interested in the whole genre and the possibilities of the genre from there.
On our big show that we did in March, I think, in the actual Royal Festival Hall itself, we were all so scared. But like, as soon as we got on stage, like, all the cares just went away. You know, I was shaking a bit afterwards.
Yeah, I think that's the best thing about performing, because during rehearsals, just before the performance, everyone's like, "Oh my god, I'm so worried. It's gonna go bad. It's gonna this and that." And then we get on stage, and it's just so amazing. I think that's the best feeling about performing.
Recordings. No one who ever saw and heard Klaus Stenstedt perform will ever forget it. Like Wilhelm Furtwängler before him, he had one of the most unorthodox and erratic conducting techniques imaginable. But his instincts for and connection to the music he performed, particularly that of the Central German repertoire, was extraordinary. With Mahler, it was uncanny. Only Leonard Bernstein, in my experience, connected so totally with the inner world, the emotional landscape of this music. Like Bernstein, Tenstedt took us to the edge and back. It was both unsettling and uplifting. He was, of course, the LPO's principal conductor in the mid-1980s, forming a unique partnership which continued even after he was forced to relinquish the title due to ill health. In February 1989, he conducted two emotionally charged performances of Mahler's Resurrection Symphony at the Royal Festival Hall with soloists Yvonne Kenny and Jaap van Ness. The second of those performances was recorded and has just been released on the LPO label. Listening to it again, reliving every visionary moment, I was struck once more by how the music seems to find its own space. Some of the tempi might raise eyebrows today, but for great Mahlerians like Tenstedt, tempi were never an issue. He was so totally in the moment that we too hung on to every note. Put simply, it took as long as it took. What was it like playing in the orchestra under this great conductor? Well, there are several musicians in the LPO who have been playing with the orchestra for over 20 years, and they share their memories of Klaus Tenstedt.
I'm Fiona Higham. I'm a member of the second violin section, and I've been a member of this orchestra since 1989, and I played before that as well as an extra player. So I worked a lot with Klaus Tenstedt, and I think it's hard to define what makes a great maestro, but in a way he was sort of almost one of the last old-school great maestri. He certainly didn't have a clear beat, but he had something wonderful which he imparted to the orchestra somehow just by his gestures, and produced this amazing sound, especially in the strings, I think. When people talk about the legacy of Tenstedt's sound, it's the string sound, I think they're often talking about, isn't it? Because he sort of gave this rich, creamy sound to the whole string section. Had this wonderful, he was terribly tall and gangly, and he used to sort of stand on the rostrum like a big sort of albatross and kind of holding his arms up, and he just, when he put his arms out like this, it was a sort of all-encompassing gesture which made you just want to give as much as you could.
I always remember Tenstedt as being like a huge spider. He got very gangly long legs and very gangly arms, and the thing is, he was in the centre of the spider's web, and he had these sort of tentacles that went out over the whole band. He seemed a strange mixture, because I'd been reading somewhere that he was very insecure about his own conducting. But I think that's what gave some of the tension and excitement to the performances. And he did produce this amazing sound from the orchestra, and and you can't put your finger in, you can't really put it into words, but it's to do with the aura he projects. It's beyond words, and it comes out in the music. I first met him when I was in the Rotterdam Phil, which was about 1979, and we were doing Beethoven Eroica. He was there for a week as a guest, and for some reason I was leading the basses, and we had a little problem with the funeral march. The beginning is all a bit tricky. So I had to speak to him in the tea break about where he wants us to start playing this. And he was all of a stage, you know, it was all this nervous tension. He was, oh, you play here like this. And yet there was even with that, there was a sort of kindness about him. You never felt it was really your fault. And then when I joined the LPO in 81, there he was just beginning to take over from Scholte. And looking back over, nearly 30 years, to me his concerts were a great privilege to be part of. And I just sometimes, even now, there are passages in Mahler or Bruckner where I can just see him standing there, you know, even with 20 years later. And it is very sad that he died, you know, so young. And it's also sad that the younger generation of LPO haven't experienced what we did.